let's just summarize what we saw here in the Sugyas HaGemara. The Gemara raised a contradiction between a Braisa and our Mishnah, because our Braisa that's quoted here at the very beginning of the Sugya on Kuf Aleph seems to indicate that we don't need what's called Gvoim in Ha'aretz. So if you recall, for what we learned on Thursday of last week, I'm just going to close the window here. So we were talking about temporary replacement doors, which are not real doors, they're just a kind of a stopgap measure. For example, he has a backyard and he never really goes out there. He has an entranceway. And occasionally he goes out there. So instead of putting a real door, which is attached to the structure with hinges and so forth, he uses, and the Mishnah gives a whole list of various kinds of very flimsy and very temporary kind of doors. Just to give one or two examples, the Mishnah says that he has chadokim, which we said were like piles and bundles of thorns that he uses to close up this pirtza, this opening, or machtzelos, he uses various kinds of mats. And the Mishnah says that here's the difference between a deles, a door that is part of the structure of a building that you're allowed to open and close on Shabbos. That's not nira kibbonah. It doesn't look in any way that he's adding something to the structure of the building, because it's a permanent, normal, fixed, attached door. But in these cases, it looks like he's adding something to the structure. Why? Because these are not real doors. You know, they're only temporary in nature. And the exception, the case in which, according to our Mishnah, you're allowed to close up these entranceways, etc., even with a temporary door, is Gvoim min ha'aretz, which means that he attaches it with a string and it is suspended in midair. And by doing so, it becomes obvious to any spectator that he did so in order to create a delis. And what he does is he ties down this temporary kind of door, as we said, to plug up his frame, and it's suspended in air. This Bryce, on the other hand, does not mention and add this requirement of Gvoim min ha'aretz. And Abai comes to offer his answer to reconcile the Mishnah with the Braisa, and Rava offers his suggestion. But just to review this, Abai says that the case of the Braisa, where it's nikar, it's muchach, it's clear to everyone that this is serving as a door, and therefore it has the same din as a door, and you're allowed to open it and close it, is a case where it has a tzir. In other words, it's attached with some sort of a hinge. Maybe it's not the normal hinges, but it's got some sort of a hinge. And that's going to prove to the onlooker that it's designated as a door, because the tzir itself, which means that they take the frame and they drill a hole in it. And what they do is they put a peg of a wooden peg. And what you do is when you lift up the door, you hinge it, you put it down in that hinge, in that which was made, as we said before, by a peg in a hole in the frame of the door. So that's called Deles Sheyesh Lo Tzir. I'll read to you his translation of Tzir to explain Abai, excuse me. And he writes the following. He says that in Mishnaic times, doors were hung by means of pivots. So these pivots were located in the entranceway to the door, even though this door is not attached to the doorway, but the very fact that it has the pivot, in other words, he's already set up the door in such a way that, I'm sorry, he set up the frame in such a way that he's going to add a door, that Abai says that if he attaches, again, this temporary kind of a door to the doorway, and it has that pivot, then it's not to be misconstructed. Nobody will make a mistake and think it's an act of construction. And therefore, according to Abai, this itself suffices, and we don't need, as we said before, tolui, meaning that it should be suspended in midair. Rav, on the other hand, said that we don't even need that right now there be a tzir. According to the Braisa, we could allow this if at some point earlier in time, hayalahem tzir, because if you take a look at the frame of where he should put a door, he has the holes, you know, he has the imprint of the tzir. And even after the door was removed, nevertheless, obviously, you see, the naked eye could tell that you use it as a door, that there's a door there that should be used. So again, the difference between Abai and Rav is where Abai requires tzir b'mitzius, that there has to actually be a tzir. Rav says it's enough if the impression of the tzir, because there once was a tzir, that's enough. And in both cases, we're trying to remove any sort of mistaken impression or misconstruction, as we said before, which is Tate Masna, that they shouldn't misconstruct it as if he's making a construction, if you follow me. So the Gemara asks Meisvei, what are we going to do with the following Braisa? The Braisa says, Deles Hanigreres. So let's just make a note of where we're up to here. We are now in Daf Kuf Aleph, and we're about 10 lines down from the top, maybe 9 lines down from the top. The first one in the line is Omar. And the Braisa reads, Deles Hanigreres, Umachzeles Hanigreres, Vekankana Nigrar, Bizman, Sheyesh Lehem Tzir, Ugvoim Min Ha'aretz, Afilu Mole Nema, Noalimbo, Vimlav Ein Noalimbo. The Braisa, in these three cases, of number one, Deles, number two, Machzeles, and number three, Kankan, in all these three different forms, it requires not only that they be Tluyim, and not only that they have a Tzir, but it also requires Gvoim Min Ha'aretz. It doesn't matter how much they're off the ground, even a small amount. Lovud is not relevant to you. And only when you have all those conditions met are you allowed to close these entranceways on Shabbos, Vim Lav. And if you're lacking even that third condition, that it has to be suspended off the ground, ain't no one, but you're not allowed to use them. So it's not enough to say, well, you know, he tied it down, and there's a pivot, so he has to just fit it into the pivot and attach it with that tzir. It's also got to be suspended. in midair. Abayman tarts the time, Varovim tarts the time, Abayman tarts the time. Then when the Brisa says you need a tzir and it's got to be Gvoim in a Oretz, it doesn't mean that the Brisa intended to teach you that you need both, but rather, when you under what conditions are you allowed to close the door? Oh, Kishayesh la tzir. Oh, Shegvoim in a Oretz. Don't read it as one flowing sentence that it's got to be both Yeshlem Tzir and Gavoh Minor. It's only one condition is necessary, and it's either or. It could be Yeshlem Tzir and it's not Gavoh Minor. It could be Gavoh Minor and it doesn't have a Tzir. Rav, on the other hand, says, I'm gonna explain the Braisa. Kisha Hayalem Tzir, Oak Shegvoim Minaretz. He also adds the word O, and either one of these conditions, when fulfilled, could be Matir. But instead of Hayalem Tzir, I'm sorry, instead of Yeshlem Tzir, he reads it as Hayalahem Tzir. So according to the Maskana, if we summarize the final conclusion of this discussion, we can be matir ne'ila b'deles in a case of a deles that's just suspended. There are many different ways that we can be matir. Number one, tzir, or as Rava would have it, makom tzir, once had a tzir. Or number two, if we use it on a regular basis, then it becomes permanent. And then we have a third possibility called Gvoim Min Ha'aretz, meaning if it's suspended in midair, off the ground, it doesn't have a tzir or a makom tzir, it's not kavua, and nevertheless we're allowed to use it on Shabbos to close the door because it's Gvoim Min Ha'aretz. And it's very interesting that the Bir Halacha of the Mishnah Brura, when he tries to define what's the difference between kavua, which we said was one of the three possibilities, if it's mishtamish kavua, we don't need neither a tzir, nor a makom tzir, nor a gvoim min ha'aretz. And the answer is, says the Mishnah Brura, depends whether he uses it within every 30-day period. Daya mishtamish ba kol pachos mishloshim yom. In other words, we're going to use the concept of kvius that we find elsewhere, and that's 30 days. 30 days is called kvius for many, many different dinim. So a serious amount of time that passes and he hasn't used it, that's a 30-day period. But if he uses it within 30 days, that's called kavua. That's enough to be considered kavua. Now, I just want to mention here in the note, he quotes Rabbeinu Peretz. Rabbeinu Peretz says that if you look at our girsa in the Brisa that was used to refute Abai and Rava, it says, Bizman Shekshurim Utluyim. Again, you may notice that we have that in parentheses. And then it says, Ugvoh min ha'aretz. Says Rabbeinu Peretz, again, this is one of the Rishonim, way before the Bach. Maybe the Bach knew about this Rabbeinu Peretz. He says that if you have that girsa of Bizman Shekshurim Utluyim Ugvoh min ha'aretz, then there's no kasha on Abai Varava. Because clearly the Braisa is saying that Gvoh min ha'aretz, if it has that attribute, that plus, is enough to be matir ne'ila, because kshurim utluyim, he says, Rabbeinu Peretz, eino milos bifnei atzmon, sharei efsha shiyu gvoim min ha'aretz, below shiyu kshurim utluyim. How do you get something suspended in air, unless it's number one, kashur, it's tied down, in a very small kind of a rope, Utluyim, and it's suspended. then it's Gvoa Min Haaretz. So that if you're going to tell me that the Girsa is that you have Tluyim, Kshurim, Tluyim, and Gvoa Min Haaretz, then what does it mean when it says Yesh Lahem Tzir? Obviously, Kshurim and Tluyim and Gvoa Min Haaretz are all one. You cannot have Gvoa Min Haaretz without having Kshurim and Tluyim. And Abai Varava now telling us that if they're not Gvoa Min Haaretz, you require a Tzir. Again, in the different shittas of Abai Varava. So therefore, Rabbeinu Peretz says the correct Yirsa should be the following. Bizman sheyesh lehem Tzir, u Gvoa Min Haaretz. Then Noel in Bohem, which means that you need Gvoa Min Haaretz, which means Kshurim and Tluyim, and you also need that it have its seer, so it has both. And the Gemara says that you see that it's not enough to have its seer, you also need Gvoa Min Haaretz. And it's not enough to have one plus, you need two pluses. Now, where did our Girsa come from? We have a Girsa that says, Bizman she Kshurim utluyim ugvoim min haaretz. So apparently that's the girsa of the Baal HaMor. And the Baal HaMor learns that the Gemara's kasha against Abai V'Rava is from the Reisha of the Braisa. And it's true that the Reisha of the Braisa seems to contradict the Sefer of the Braisa. But basically, Abai V'Rava, Lishitasam, are coming to really reconcile the Reish and the Braisa. Reish and the Sefer of the Braisa. Tana Rabbanan. So we'll finish up the sugya that we started on Thursday, so we could start a slightly new sugya today. And it says the following. Tana Rabbanan. Sochei kotzim vechavilin. So now we're talking about the samach of sochei in Aramaic replaces a sin. So it's referring to sichin. Sichin are different types of thorn bushes, low bushes. And then we have kotzim. And then we have chavilim, which are bundles of kotzim. Sheskinam lepirtza shebechotzer. And he designates them to close an opening of a chatzer. Now let's just review a little bit of background here from what we know in the past. If you have a chatzer and it has a kosel, then that chatzer does not have to worry about a second chatzer that's on the other side of the kosel, because the kosel separates between the two chatzeros, so that in Hilchas Erevin, there's no need for this chatzer to set up an Erev together with that chatzer, unless there's a pirtza, which is a breach of 10 amos wide, that opens up this kosel. And in such a case, unless he is memayit the pirtza, unless he diminishes the size of the opening, then he will need, in order to take anything from his house out to his chatzer, he will need to set up an Erev with the next door chatzer. Because between the two of them, there's a kosel that has a pirtz in it. So he has to be memayit the pirtz. And the Braisa says he can use these various kinds of bundles of thorns under the following stipulation in order to clog up his pirtz. And again, he's allowed to use these bundles on Shabbos. And what are the conditions necessary? Bizman shekshurim utluyim. That before Shabbos, he had taken these bundles, and not only tied the bundles, but he had tied the rope to the pirtza, and these bundles are suspended from the ground. And then Noel and Bohem b'Shabbos v'ein tzach lomer b'yontif. And now he can use these bundles as a pluggage, so to speak, to plug up the pirtza, and as a result, he can carry out to his chatzer, and he doesn't need any sort of an eruv. Why? Because since they're kshurim and tluyim, that's enough. Now the Rashba adds the following comment, that the Braisa only mentions kshurim and tluyim. It doesn't mention nigrarim. And the answer is because the Braisa wants to tell you that if it would be nigrarim, and they would actually be in contact with the ground, then it would be also to use this as a to close the pirtza, because you must have kshurim utluyim, and tluyim is the opposite of nigrarim. Now, what about seer? So the Meiri says that in this case of a bundle of thorns, lo shayach b'em heker tzir. In a deles, you have some sort of a door, then the fact that the frame has a tzir, and you could set up the door on the pivot, that itself is a heker. But in these cases, there's no tzir. So therefore, the issue of Abai v'Rava is not relevant to this price. Tani, we have another brisa of Rabbi Chiya. It's also relevant to this discussion. Deles almona hanigreris ein noalimba. Now, the word almona is being used as an idiomatic phrase to indicate that there's something lacking in this deles. And what is it? It's nigrarim. It's not suspended in air. It's dragging on the ground. So that's not the way you set up a deles. And therefore you cannot use this deles that's nigreres as ne'ila on Shabbos to close your door. Because once again, it's not apparent that this is a functioning as a door. And therefore it's nireh ki melechas bona, as if he's adding something to the construction. And l'chora, this case in the Braisa is very similar to the case in the Mishnah, which was deles shebemukteh. And in both cases, the common link is that they're not lifted off the ground. So the Braisa says nigreres, and that's indicative of the fact that it's not lifted off the ground. And the case of Delisha B'mukta, as we said, in the backyard, which is mentioned explicitly in our Mishnah, that's also because it's not suspended from the ground. So that it comes out that according to some Rishonim, it's very interesting that this Braisa doesn't seem to be adding anything to our Mishnah. Tosis, however, this Tosis Divrei Maschil Deles, this very short Tosis, says that the Chiddush of Deles Almona is that it's Asur. You're not allowed to use it to close your window or your opening, your entrance as a door, even though it has a tzir. And that's a Chumrah that doesn't apply to the Delos Shebemukta in our Mishnah, where Abai and Rava say that a tzir is enough to be matir. Now, it's not clear from Tosfos, in the name of the Ri, he says that even though it has a tzir, nevertheless, ain't nolim, but why is this different? So the only thing I could suggest here, as a kind of a dochak, is to say that this deles almona is in some sense, not only is it dragging on the ground, in other words, it's not suspended in the air, but also there's something about this deles I'm not exactly sure what it is, that seems to indicate that it's not a delis at all. And in addition to being negreres, there's some other chisaron here, such that seer would not help you. So Gemara asks, Hechi dami, maybe this will become clearer when we finish the sugya. What is a delis almana? In other words, what feature or characteristic of a normal delis is lacking in this delis almana? In other words, the Gemara assumes in the Braiser of Chia that you read it delis almana stop negreres. In other words, there's something already deficient in this delis, and that's why it's described as a delis almana. And on top of that, it's negreres. So it's missing something, and it has a tarti l'rei, so it's also got a second strike against it, because it's not suspended in midair. So what's the first strike against it? Ika diamri, according to one opinion, it's the chad shifa. It's made from one plank of wood. Every other delis at the time of the Talmud was made with various slats of wood, and then they were connected one to the other. And that's the way a delis looked. That was the tsuras hadelis. This one looks like he just took a plank, a very large plank, and he slammed it or jammed it against the Pesach. But it's not a door at all. It's just something that is makeshift, but on the other hand, it's a, let's call it an ol haroi, it's some sort of an oil, it's some sort of construction in the, you know, in the building itself, because the building has this opening, and that's the first lishna in the Gemara. So again, it's not made of what we call nesarim, mechubarim, of various planks of wood that are connected to each other, but rather it's made of one plank of wood, one solid plank of wood. The Ritva clarifies this a little further. He says, Derech adlosos lasoso mikama kroshim ulechabram yofe beumnus. So there was a door maker, a professional door maker, and he would take all these smaller planks and somehow connect them together. The Meiri writes that Darkam Hoyalasos Sadelos Mishne Luchos Hanisgorim Ze Mul Ze. That the Delos was made of two planks that would close and attach one to the other. But if he made it of one luach, of one tablet, so to speak, then that's called a delis almana. And that's different than a classic delis. Now, the super commentaries on the Meiri on Erevin were written by Rav Simcha Zissel Breuder. I don't know if you heard of him. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Chevron Yeshiva, an outstanding giant in his own way. But anyway, he wrote the footnotes on the Meiri on Masechta Erevin. Almost every Masechta is written with different footnotes. In fact, my Rebbe Rav Alpert Olvashom wrote the footnotes on Bab Metzia. Anyway, so Rav Simcha Zissel says the following. He says, Yesh ledaik mitvarov, from the Meiri would seem, Shegamim adeles habodedes murkeves mikamen esorim. If, let's say, you had one plank that was made up of a combination of many smaller planks, then it would not be considered a viable delis. It would be considered a delis almana because it doesn't have a partner, so to speak. The way that the Meiri envisions constructing the delis at the time of the Gemara was two planks that smashed one against the other. But so the number of nesarim is totally irrelevant according to the Meiri. Whereas according to Rashi and the Ritva, the question is how many different planks make up the door, because they understood there was only one there was only one piece of wood that would make up the door. Ika di Amri, the Gemara is a second Lishna, the Lesle Gashma. What makes this Delis Almana different than any other Delis? It's Lesle Gashma. Okay, what's Gashma? Gashma is translated here as Rechaim. Okay, what does this mean? So the Ritva says the following: Derech dal soseim haisalias mechubarim bibrichim ktanim chitzonim milvada masmerim hatkuim besof karshe adlosos. So again, this is the Ritva l'shitaso, that their doors were made of connecting multiple crushing, and they wanted to make sure that the connection between one Keresh and the next was absolutely solid. So they didn't rely on nails. That wasn't enough. But rather they would add brichim ktanim. On the outside, they would add these clamps. And they would use the nails not just to attach the different pieces of wood, but they would also use clamps. I thought I have an example to show you, but I see it's not here. Anyway, if you look in the book covers, I don't know, we'll call it book covers. In the old days, they are made with clamps, which are called brichim. Now, this deles, says the Ritva, was attached, the nesarim, the various planks of wood, were connected with nails, but without brichim, without these external clamps. And therefore, it is not obvious that this is a delis. And I would add the following comment, I don't know if I'm correct, that these laws would change and would be relative to each society. What is the accepted delis in a certain area at a certain time? So there's a very famous painter here, an artist in Israel. I think he's still alive, as far as I know, Aryeh Zen. And he makes Jerusalem doors, paintings of Jerusalem doors. I can show you a few of them if you're interested. And they're beautiful paintings. Apparently, in Jerusalem, they put a lot of emphasis on the doors. And the Gemara says in Bava Basra that there were different things that they attached to the door to notify guests that they wanted to accept guests. It's really fascinating. The doors of Jerusalem. It really goes back to the time of the Gemara. I know in my youth, when I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn, New York, they had certain types of doors that were very popular. Today, there are different types of doors that are popular. So it could be that in every situation, in every society, in every time, you know, whether or not it would be obvious to the onlooker that this is a door would depend upon how they structured the doors in that time and in that place. Now the Gemara goes a step further in discussing the laws of binyan, of being bona, and the sugya that we're about to learn now is relevant to yontif, primarily to yontif, not so much to Shabbos. Until now, what we learned about Nira Kibona, that's relevant to Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hai Midurta, he's got a very large flame, a fire, we'll call it a campfire, and he prepared it before Yontif, and he made it a pyre, I think it's called in English, but it's kind of like a, almost like a triangle, like a teepee. And it's very close to the karka. So he places eitzim, pieces of wood, and he makes like a kind of a square around it so that he can put the, you know, the various eitzim and add more fire through the hole on top into this kind of square that's again made of wood. And Rabbi Yehuda says that this madura, if you want to set it up, it's got to be made with certain specifications, because otherwise it's nira kibinyan, this square frame, so to speak, for his fire on Shabbos, on Yom. He says that milamala lemata, very interesting, he has to make a shinui. He has to apparently do it in a very unusual way, and he's got to attach from the top to the bottom. Sorry, that's allowed. But milamata lemala, if he wants to structure this the way he would normally do it during a weekday, which means he would start from the lower part near the ground and then put the higher, add the wood on the higher side. Also, that's not allowed because, again, it looks like he's building an oil. He's creating like the phanos, like walls of a structure. V'chein be'asen, also in the case of an egg, what they would do is, when they had an open grill, and they wanted to grill eggs on Yontif, and they would place these grills on the coals, and the coals themselves were structured on some sort of metal foundation. And on Yontif, you're allowed to do so, but only if on the one hand you grab onto the eggs, and then you will place the foundation underneath it. You don't set up the foundation, which is called in Hebrew chatzubah, if you're familiar with that word, or the base planks of wood, or this chatzubah that's made of metal. You don't do that first and then put the eggs on top, because once you structure this chatzubah or the eitzim on the bottom, it looks like you're creating an oil. So rather what you have to do is you have to sort of hold on to the eggs and then tuck in the chatzubah underneath it. V'chein kidra. Kidra is a kedera. So what they did was they would set up two barrels, one near the other, and in between the two barrels, they would bring a fire, and the kedera was lower down on these two barrels that would hold the kedera, so the fire would cook that which is inside the pot. And if he wants to do this on Yontif, which he's allowed to do it, he has to grab onto the kedera, hold it suspended in air, then place the two chaviot, these two barrels, underneath the pot, and then, just one second, let me see if I can get this right. Right, he should not first set up the two chaviot, because these two chaviot that are going to hold onto the pot look like a structure, like the legs of a bed or something along that line. So rather he should hold on to his pot and then, so to speak, push in the barrels underneath the pot after he's got a good grasp on the pot. V'chein bepuria. So too in the case of a bed, which is made up of a frame that has four legs, and you set up Urios, which means a kind of curtains that are made of leather, and they are stretched to the outer frame of the Misgaret. In other words, this frame would have loops, and what he would do is he would put down the frame and then add the leather on top, and then the leather on its various corners would have strips, or straps, I think would be a better word, and they would tie the straps into the loops, into the rings. And once again, this looks like he is creating a brand new oil. So we need a shinui. What are we going to ask him to do? We're going to ask him to first stretch out the leather, which is going to be the place where he sleeps on the bed, right? Holds up his body. Stretch it out with his hands on all four sides, and then tuck in the framework underneath this, large stretched out piece of leather. But he shouldn't do it the other way around and first set up the bed, meaning the bed frame, and then bring the leather and tie it down to the four corners. Again, we're assuming he's tying it with a knot that's a kesher, shena shel kayom, and so forth. So that's not the issue. But the issue here is that once he sets up the frame, and then he's going to put the leather on top of the frame, it looks like OL, like he's creating an OL. And the final equation is v'chein chavita. Now, a chavita, which is the Hebrew, which is the Aramaic for chaviot, for these barrels, now we're talking about his cellar. He has a cellar, and down in his cellar, he has rows and rows of barrels, and he puts one barrel on top of the other barrel. And on Yontif, he should not be setting them up from the bottom going up like he does it during the weekday, because that looks like binyan. Again, these were very strong and weighty barrels. One barrel on the other looks like he's creating some sort of a structure. But rather what he should do is he should hold the top barrel in the air, suspended in air, then place the bottom barrel below it, and then he could lay down the top barrel on top of the lower barrel. And again, all this is a shinui to make sure that it doesn't look like meleches bone. Now, we mentioned the case of thorns, which in the Mishnah is called chadokim, and now the Gemara gives us a little bit of an agadata. Now, normally I would skip agadata, but here it's a very short agadata. And when I read this agadata, I thought to myself, maybe I could use it in one of my drushes. So we'll see. Because, you know, I like to learn a mesechta and think of it also from my father's perspective, you know, how to make it into a drusha. And Erevin is not so easy. You know, there's so many technicalities in Erevin. But here's one law in Erevin that might help us in drush. Amaleahu mino l'Rab Yeshua ben Chanan. You know that the minim who denied Torah Shebaal Peh, they used to try to quote psukim in Tanakh to show that that to show up the chacham. Chidka is a thorn, otherwise known as a kotz in Hebrew. And chidka'ah, with a mapik hay at the end, means you are a kotz. He's turning to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and he's saying, you're a thorn. That's what you're worth. Obviously, he's making fun of Rabbi Yeshua. And how do I know so? Ksivbahu, a pasuk at the end of Micha, it says, Tovam, the best of them, kechedek, are to be compared to a chedek. And we said the word chedek means a thorn. He says here in the name of the Ben Yoyoda, Kavanas Amin Hoysolafari, Shedima, Kosovis Yisrael, Aremas, Kotzim, Aumdim, La Sokovikilun. they were so anti-Semitic, these Minim. You know, I think I made a mistake. I said to you before that they deny Torah Baal Peh. Actually, that would be true for the Sadducees, you know, the Tzdukim and the Baitusim. Here he's talking about Minim. The Minim were the ones who, this is before Christianity actually developed, but they were the ones who used the Tanakh to try to prove that the Jews were rejected by God. They actually used Psukim in order to undermine the Torah, meaning the relationship between the Torah and Klal Yisrael. So this is a pretty good example, because the Pasuk seems to equate the Tovim Shebem, the best of the Jews, with Kotzim. Okay. Amar Le, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Kanani says, Shatya, you're a Shota. Spiel L'Sefer Dekra. Why do you read the beginning of the Pasuk, Tovam Kechedek, and you ignore the next part of the Pasuk? Dechsiv, in the very same Pasuk, the Pasuk praises Klal Yisrael and says, Yashar Mimesucha. Now, Mesucha is a particular type of a fence that is made of kotzim. And the reason why they made this kind of fence was specifically for security purposes, to surround, let's say, a field or so forth and protect a field. And Yashar means they were very straight, very honest, and again referring to the Tovam, the best of them, comparing them to a Mesucha. That's a great laudatory attribute, that they protect others because they're straight. The Elamai Tovam Kechedek. So now Rabbi Yeshua, once having established that this pasuk is coming to praise the Jewish people, so what does he do with Tovam Kechedek? The best of them are like thorns. He says, Kshem Shechadokim Alolu Meginim Ala Pirtza Kach Tovim Shebanu Meginim Aleinim. He says, just like in Hilchas Erevin, we have Halacha of a Pirtza, and you're not allowed to carry as a result of the fact that there's a Pirtza in the Mechitza, which undermines the status of the Mechitza, but what you do is you take thorns, and if you tie them together in the right way, you can use them as a way of protecting against this Pirtza, meaning neutralizing the Pirtza, so that now, because of these thorns, you have a full-fledged kosel, which would allow you to set up, or I should say, which would validate your Eruv. And you don't have to concern yourself with the chatzer on the other side of this kosel that has a pirtza in it, because you filled up the pirtza with thorn. So the thorn now is being used in order to reconstruct a wall. And the wall, again, always symbolizes Haganah, you know, to protect you. We're always protected by the walls of the city. So the Pasuk is basically repeating itself for emphasis. The Reish of the Pasuk says that Tovam Kechedek, that the best of them are like those thorns that are used to close up a Pirtza and protect the field that's encompassed or surrounded by a Kosa that has a Pirtza in it, but now we filled up the Pirtza. And the Sefer of the Pasuk expounds on the same idea, Yashar Mimesucha, that they are straight and Yashar, again to protect us like a Gader, which is made of thorns. As we said before, Mesucha is the word for a Gader Anaseis Minakotzim, which affords Shmira and Agana. And that's exactly what the Yesharim accomplish. Now, the Netziv Mivalojin, I don't know why he doesn't mention this, the Netziv Mivalojin says that in his introduction to Breishis, that the name of this book is really Sefer HaYesharim, and the attribute that that singles out and makes the Avos outstanding is their Yashrus. What he has here in the footnote is that Ksherim Shebedar V'Chachmeim Roy Lehem Lochiach Es Bnei Dorim Kedei L'Shomra Min Averos. So the manhigim, the leaders of every generation, are meant to not only guide the generation of the people, but also to give them rebuke and make sure that they're going on the right path. Val derech zeh nemar aleihem sheheim meginim. They protect the generation from puranios, because these leaders will rebuke the people and chastise them. V'hu shekasuv tovam kechedek yashar mimesucha. Tovim shemem kechadok shesos mimem es hapirtos. They, by giving critique and rebuking the members of their generation, what they're doing is they're really plugging up these breaches, and they're going to protect the orchards. And yashar mimesucha, they're called yesharim, because when you put up a fence, it should be straight. And that's what they do. They put up a fence that's straight, that protects their generation. And that's the shvach here of this pasuk. And that leads us to the Dover Acher, Tovim Kechedek, Mahadkim Es Harishoim Legehenna, a whole nother interpretation of Tovam Kechedek, which means that the greats of Israel are like thorns in the sides of the Rishoyim, and they actually sort of crush the Rishoyim. And the Rishoyim here probably is a reference, or I should say an allusion to the Umos HaOlam, to the nations of the world that try to rise up and destroy us. And he adds the word Gehenom here. In other words, it seems that a Rasha should go to Gehenom. That's obvious. That's his punishment. But the greats of Israel, the leaders of Israel, will push the Rishayim, you know, attack them with these thorns to such an extent that they are completely rejected from Gan Eden. In other words, even more than, it's maybe the Rishayim get some little piece of Gan Eden, and then for the rest of the time they're sent to Gehenna. But what the Tzaddikim are going to do is, it means they're going to make it impossible for these Rishayim of the Umos HaOlam to have any part in Gan Eden. They are completely rejected from Gan Eden. Shenemar, again going back to Micha's description of the end of days, Kumi Vidoshi Bas Tzion. Doshi means to crush. And Bastion is a reference to the greats of Israel. We'll try to see why. Ki karnech osim barzel ufarso sayich osim nechusha vadikos amim ravim. And then it says in the post, vachramti lashem bitzom v'chelam ladon kol ha'aretz. So this means that Klal Yisrael in the future, at the end of time, will be Mahadek Umos Olam. They will sort of pierce them with thorns. Now let me read to you the full translation of this pasuk in Micha. He says the following: Arise and thresh, daughter of Zion, because your horn I will make iron. Your hoof I will make brass, and you shall crush many peoples. He says here in the Hebrew translation, Mahadkim es harashoyim legehenem yeser al haroy lehem lefi avanosam. It's interesting that, you know, it's like, if I give a mashal, maybe it's not a very aesthetically pleasing mashal, but in a boxing match, you know, imagine that, you know, one of them, we'll call him A, hits B, and B is on his way down, but instead, he gives him one more box, you know, and he pushes him down in such a way that, forget it, you know, he won't be able to get up again. So the tzaddikim in the future, in terms of their relationship to our enemies, maybe when he says Umas Ha'olam, he's referring to Amalek, I'm not sure, but somebody who's an enemy of the Jewish people, and it's going to be like threshing, like crushing them completely. And he quotes a Rashi in Micha, when it says here, Parsosayich, Heim kiprosos habehema hadoshos es atvua, She Yosim es Parsos Yisrael kinechoshes, She kocha rav ladush. In other words, apparently, you know, when you take an animal that has split hooves and it does disha and it crushes the tvua to remove the kernel, right? So in the Nimshal, Klal Yisrael are going to be like hooves that are made of metal. And they have a tremendous power to crush, to do this disha that we spoke about. And that's Yeser al haroy lahem lefi avonoseihem. And that leads us to the Mishnah. If you have 2 minutes, we'll fit in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah deals with, again, a case of a person standing in Rishus HaRabim and he wants to carry in another Rishus. We said in the previous Mishnayos that if he's standing in one Rishus, he's allowed to lock the door in another Rishus if the key is located in that Rishus under certain conditions. It's got to be Lamal Me'asar and so forth and so on. And our Mishnah says, Lo Yaman Oda Rishus HaYochid V'Yiftach Rishus HaRabim. That our Mishnah says, you're not allowed to stand in one Rishus and open or close the door by using a Deles in another Rishus. And the reason for this is we're afraid, and the Gzera was, that he might take the key with him. Instead of laying it down there, near the door that he closes in Rishus HaRabim, Rishus HaYochid, he might be tempted to bring it back to where he's standing, and then he's violating Havara Mirshus Lushus, Elam Kein Asa Mechitza Gavoa Asar Tfachim, unless he can guarantee himself that he's going to have to pass over a Mokom Ptur, which means above Asar Tfachim. We had similar cases in the past where the window was above Asar Tfachim, we allowed him to throw his rubbish out. Here also, if he's surrounded by a mechitza in the place that he's standing, so that there's no way that he can carry it from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid above 10 tefachim, the maximum he could do is take it through a makom ptur, which is above 10 tefachim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Amru lo, so the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Meir. They were much more mekil. And they proved it from the following story. Maisa b'shuk shel p'tamim. P'tamim are butchers. Shehayu b'Yerushalayim. Shehayu, they were standing on Shabbos, which is a Rabbim, and Noalim, and they would lock their stores, their butcheries, their butcher shops, that were in a manul with a lock that was above 10 tfachin. And meinichem es hamafteach b'chalon sha'al gabei ha-pesach. And they would place the key on a windowsill that was on top of the entranceway. And the windowsill apparently had 4 tefachim in width, and therefore, since it was above 10 tefachim in height, it had the status of Rishus HaYochid. Now, why aren't they afraid that he might take his key, and instead of putting it on that high threshold of a window, he might be tempted to take it into his Rishus, and he's standing in Rishus HaRabim. And the Chachom are now disproving Rabbi Meir, who says that no, you're not allowed to do this in any occasion. And yet the story was that in the Shuk Shel Patomim Shoyev Yerushalayim, they actually did this. And they would lock the door of their stores as they were standing in Rishus HaRabim, and they would put the key down on the sill, and we're not worried about the possibility that they may pull the mafteach back to where they are in Rishus HaRabim. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Omer Shuk Shel Tzamorim, that's not relevant to us. Question is where this happened, and Rabbi Yossi said it didn't happen in the Shuk of butchers, but rather had the Shuk of wool savers, you know, wool sellers. Sorry, Avi, that's where it took place. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll try to summarize this Mishnah, the Machlok Stream of Meir and the Chachamim, and then we're going to see the Gemara is going to get into a whole analysis about the Shita of Rabbi Meir. That's the Mirtz Hashem for tomorrow. So we're up to the second Mishnah, the Mishnah towards the bottom of Daf Kuf Aleph, and the Gemara, which is 5 lines up before the end of the Yom.